Hello there, my horror homies. Welcome to another episode. I'm Liz, a lifelong horror fanatic looking to share all of my useless thoughts on all things spooky. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Let's jump right into the scares. Another side note on this one is a spoiler alert if you haven't seen the new Halloween movie. There will be some spoilers, but let's get into it. Halloween. The weather is changing, the leaves are turning colors, and the pumpkin guts are building up under your fingernails. You just returned from a night of trick-or-treating and are warming up by the fire on the living room rug. You remove your mask. It was a particularly fruitful year, and you dump your candy haul out onto the carpet. Let the candy trading begin. I know, right? When you heard this, you're probably thinking something along the lines of the good old days. Why can't I go back? Or what mask was I wearing? But here's the best part of the story. And it's a plot twist. It's in 2021, just last year. It doesn't matter how old you are, this can be your Halloween every year. Halloween traditions are the best. They tend to be as weird as they are meaningful. My family and I turn all the lights off and eat chili and donuts by candlelight while we trade candy. We're a high-class people. The most common Halloween tradition I think we all celebrate in one way or another? Horror movies. Now, I do this every other day, but for some people, turning out the lights, snuggling up with a bowl of popcorn, and waiting to get your pants scared off only comes once a year. The most wonderful time of the year. The tradition of horror movies is a popular one. So what's a fan favorite movie choice on such a holiday? Halloween, of course. Made for its namesake, Halloween brings its A-game when it comes down to the holiday spirit. A spine-tingling soundtrack, a surplus of slashes, a hell of a heroine, and just a dash of nudity. What do you get? A luscious, perfectly baked, campy horror flick meatloaf. Our leading lady, Laurie Strode, first encounters the murderous Michael Myers in 1978. It's an instant masterpiece. Michael Myers' M.O. is sort of a watcher. He's an unstoppable tank of murder that will break through any barrier to get to your throat. But you never see any hustle out of old Mikey. He's a watcher. By that I mean you could be walking, or running, or swimming, or flying. He's somehow always right behind you, just on a casual afternoon stroll to kill, walking slow as hell. But if you catch him coming from a doorway or a window, he'll just stand at a distance and watch you. Just stare at you through those black holes in his mask. That blank, emotionless mask. Hence the name, The Watcher. Michael has no hustle. I feel like if you were to walk briskly out into the open in a straight line, you would be fine. Laurie Strode in 1978 would disagree with me, but unfortunately we're not here to talk about 1978. We're here to talk about 2021, which is a little bit of a different story. I normally like to do these things in order, but I had so much to say about this movie, I had to make this episode before too much time passed. Halloween Kills came out last year in 2021 as a direct sequel to Halloween 2018, which I was excited for, because the 2018 adaptation was such a badass movie. Laurie Strode is still there, kicking ass, and knowing what's best for everyone involved. She's one of my favorite final girls because she's so believable. In all of the Halloween movies, she is absolutely petrified, at the same time so willing to throw down with Michael to end his reign over her life. Laurie also isn't invincible, which is a huge flaw of movie heroes nowadays for me. Michael has also reached new heights of violence because we have more graphics and effects to work with. People have less imagination and have to visually see the carnage to get the message. However, the ending of the 2018 movie is phenomenal. No spoilers here, but I was completely blown away by it, both by surprise and the quality. Even horror movies that are coming out currently that I actually enjoy, I find I am sometimes let down by the endings. Maybe they're predictable, or maybe it's just sort of uneventful. But the showdown of Halloween is perfection. I bring this up because Halloween Kills opens directly after the events of the Halloween 2018. Halloween Kills jumps between two timelines right at the beginning, which sets the tone for a lot of confusion. Officer Hawkins is bleeding out and remembering his first interaction with Michael. Except the movie doesn't even tell you or imply any of that. It just jumps to the next scene, and suddenly a young cop is also being called Hawkins and is chasing Michael. There's also a B story about bullying in these flashbacks that only adds to the ultimate timeline confusion, but we'll just ignore that. In the flashback, we find out Hawkins shot and killed his partner in an attempt to kill Michael. Michael is then apprehended moments later, and that's our intro to the movie. Now, to me, that implies that Officer Hawkins will be playing a large role in this film, as he then establishes that he must be the one to kill Michael. But it doesn't really play out that way. After the credits, we open to a bar where we meet the Expendables. Not from the movie, but the characters we know the movie needs as appetizers for Michael to kill off for the story to progress. As it turns out, half of these characters are the child stars from previous Halloween films. They discuss their experiences and survival stories about Michael Myers and give a toast to Laurie Strode, I quote, wherever she may be. That cues the cameraman to cut to the aftermath of the last movie, which is a stabbed and bloodied Laurie driving away from the burning house they trap Michael inside. She's there with her daughter and niece who are tending to her wounds. Suddenly, a gang of fire trucks whiz past Laurie's car to go extinguish the flames as she pleads with them to let it burn. Obviously, they can't hear her. They drove past at 1,000 miles an hour. However, this triggers my favorite scene in the whole movie. And by favorite, I mean it is just the worst. Two firemen enter the home and fall through the floor, only for Michael to appear and execute them with their door opener crowbar looking thing. So now he has a weapon. He exits the burning home, crowbar in hand, to an audience of firemen eager to do their job and rescue. You would think. But Michael doesn't even take two steps forward before these firemen square up like they're about to have a dance-off, okay? In 1 second, those jaws of life became jaws of death. One starts revving his chainsaw, one attempts spraying Mikey with a poor excuse for a fire hose. Look, I would hate to need rescuing and look at these firemen the wrong way. They were ready to throw hands after just one look. Obviously, they were right to do so in this case, but the scene is a cringe factory. The guy bracing his legs and revving his chainsaw meant for rescuing trapped victims, it's... how would they even know he had ill will that quickly, let alone try to kill him with a fucking chainsaw? It's like the director was pandering to an audience that plain doesn't exist. Firemen haters. Someone emerges from a building, I hope they don't square up with me. It was so absurd, I had to write that whole part out of my brain and just remember the scene for what it was. Michael's intro. Because of course, he butchered them all effortlessly. So it was his brutal intro into the new movie. It was a creative, but cringy way to give him gore fodder. Back at the bar, the patrons learn of the attacks through the emergency broadcast. Tommy, one of the kids from the first movie, leads an angry mob outside as someone thinks they spot Michael in their vehicles. The car takes off and crashes into a pole, but the driver escapes unseen. Fair warning, this Tommy guy is angrier and definitely more unstable than Michael. It's kind of insane. At the hospital, Lori's daughter Karen is informed Michael is still alive, as Karen's daughter Allison reconciles with her cheater boyfriend. I guess if you're gonna forgive something like cheating, do it when you join an angry mob chasing a killer. Because then Allison and her cheater boyfriend join an angry mob chasing a killer to hunt down Michael to kill him. It's led by Tommy, obviously, because that guy is dangerous. Laurie is in this movie a minuscule amount. It hurts my soul. She's laying in a recovery bed after surgery, and Officer Hawkins is placed in the room with her. They reminisce about their relationship for ages. It's all info we've already seen in the movie. While Tommy's A-team is out warning the neighborhood to stay inside, they are all killed by Michael. He then arranges their bodies in festive Halloween-themed poses, which is so stupid. Michael is carnage. He doesn't decorate. He doesn't celebrate or scrapbook or relish in beautiful things. He just wants to exterminate. He will steamroll anything that gets in his way. He squishes you. He doesn't decorate you. When Tommy finds the bodies, he maps out Michael's sightings and discovers he's heading towards his childhood home. He takes some injured to the hospital, who inform Lori about Michael's survival. Now that Lori finally knows the truth, maybe we can get some shit done around here. Lori, still recovering, immediately springs into action and prepares to leave the hospital to kill Michael. Again. Now here's where the movie takes a weird turn for me. An escaped mental patient wanders into the hospital and is mistaken for Michael. I don't know how, Michael has about 3 feet on this guy, but Tommy's angry mob quickly pursue him through the hospital before Karen realizes it's not Michael. She locks him in a secure area to protect him from the mob, but they break through quickly. The mental patient then sees no other way out other than to leap from a window to his death. I'm not sure if that's supposed to be some kind of weird social statement or what, but it was totally out of place. It feels like it's done by a completely different director. Lori has some dialogue that implies Michael has made the town people so crazy he made them do it. Like, wow, maybe the one murder he had nothing to do with? Everyone in that town is a murderer now, so I think Michael's in the right place. Allison has made her way to Michael's childhood home, and just as he's about to kill her, Karen appears and stabs him in the back with a pitchfork. She steals his mask and taunts him to follow her. That's so 90s, Karen. She leads Michael to Tommy's mob, who swarm and attack him. And I'm not saying mob justice is a bad idea, okay? I want to make that perfectly clear. But do you really think after all this time, 10 people with baseball bats and chains will do anything but piss him off? These people really think no one's tried to give Michael a regular whooping before. So after about 3 minutes of beating on Michael's shoulder blades, Tommy and his mob are convinced somehow Michael is dead, which makes less than zero sense, especially considering Tommy has experience with Michael. Well, big surprise, he's not dead. He gets up from his nap and ends everyone, including Tommy, and as a bonus, he kills Karen. That's really kind of the end of the movie, and by kind of the end, I mean that's it, credits roll. The only reason they didn't succeed was because someone forgot to call Lori. Was she even in this movie? Maybe they should have just left Michael alone. He wasn't going for anybody, he was just trying to get home, apparently. Just don't get in his way, because he'll still murder your ass. They should have just stayed out of his way. Michael Myers has never been my favorite movie monster or killer, but they turned him into this criminal mastermind when he was always a one-track mind bulldozer. That was the scariest thing about him. He wasn't scared of anything, and you couldn't stop him. He was just a babysitter murder machine. I love Halloween. Maybe I'll love this year's rendition even more. So I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I love Halloween and talking all about it. Stay safe out there, all my homies. Until next week, stay spooky.